This week on the show, Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal joins us for our MLB and Red Sox season preview. Plus, we look at the hottest takes of Twitter. All that and more coming up. Calling It starts right now. Welcome into the show. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz with you. This is the Calling It podcast, powered by CLNS. It's one of those days out, Lebowitz, where you look out the window, you're driving in, and it looks absolutely beautiful. And you get out of that car, it's like 30 degrees.
Yeah, I woke up. 4 a.m. wake-up call for me, and frost all over my car, like 28 degrees.
Somehow, though, baseball starts in 4 days.
It does. Yeah, the 28th, Thursday. I can't wait.
And, of course, that makes this our MLB and Red Sox season preview episode. So let's get right into it. We're joined on the phone by Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. He is down in Fort Myers covering the final days of Red Sox spring training. Sean, how's sunny Florida?
It's been fine. It's nice weather, but I have to say, I know what you guys are dealing with back there, but I'm looking forward to getting home in about 9 days.
It's been a long stretch. It's going to be a little different. You might want to dust off the coats when you get back here. But
yeah, I'm keeping a sweatshirt to bring with me on the trip home.
The Red Sox will be coming. They'll start actually in Tampa and then come back. But still waiting to see who the final members of the team will be when they make that first trip over to Tampa. As we record this on Monday afternoon, the Red Sox are at 30 players. Do you see any surprises before they cut the roster down to the final opening day group?
So I would say the one surprise that we know of, and that comes just a little while ago, is the news that Marcus Walden has made the team. And they're probably somebody, a lot of people, even pretty diehard Red Sox fans, are asking who that is. He's been a journeyman guy. He's never made a major league appearance. He's 28 or 29, but he pitched very well this year, and he essentially beat out Brandon Workman in something of a surprise for a bullpen job. He had been stretched out a little bit where he was starting a little down here, but was very effective. He's got plus velocity of 96, 97, and I would expect that his stay is not going to be long because by the time the Red Sox get home, they're going to be close to getting ready to activate two guys that were put on the DL today, both Drew Pomeranz and Eduardo Rodriguez, who are getting healthier, but still building up some arm strength from some setbacks here. Rodriguez, the knee surgery that he underwent last October, and Pomeranz, the strained flexor tendon that he suffered about 3.5 weeks ago. But they'll be ready to pitch relatively soon, so Walden's stay will probably be brief, but at least an opportunity to be in the big leagues for a week or 10 days, and that's kind of a nice story at the end of spring training.
What do you think about Blake Swihart? What's his future with the team? It seems like he's on the cusp of being on that opening day roster, and what are the odds that they end up moving him?
The problem they're going to have down the road is that he is out of options, which is probably one of the reasons that they are working him into the roster now and creating a roster spot for him. I think it's going to be a challenge for Alex Cora to get him enough playing time to take advantage, because they do have two catchers ahead of him, both of whom are superior defensively to Swihart, and Christian Vasquez and Sandy Leon. So I wouldn't expect you're going to see him make a lot of starts behind the plate. He does give them some flexibility where perhaps in a game in which they're trailing, particularly if Leon is in the game, you might see Swihart run for him. He's one of the few catchers or guys who can catch in baseball who you would use as a pinch runner. He's athletic and speedy. And he can play a number of different positions. He's played first and third and left field and also DH down here. But if you think of him as a potential pinch hitter, the next question is, well, how many times are they going to pinch hit for anybody in this lineup? I mean, 1 through 9, there are not a lot of deficiencies offensively. So I think the challenge, while Swihart is very versatile and has had a good spring at the plate, the challenge is going to be finding opportunities to get him in. And I suspect that will be part of Alex Cora's vow to be flexible and to give his starters some rest. So, you know, you may see him in left field once every week or 10 days just to get his bat in there and just to – maybe give one of the regular outfielders an opportunity to sit. You could see him, you know, playing first and giving Canley or Mitch Moreland a day off. And I wouldn't expect that you'd see him a lot at third. I think that would be more of an emergency situation. They could play Brock Holt there. They could move Nunez over. You know, he's an interesting guy. And as I said, the challenge is going to be getting him at bats and playing time.
And we're talking to Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. You mentioned Christian Vasquez. He just signed that 3-year extension. But you still have bets that you got to pay. You still have Bradley and Bogarts. Why was Vasquez the first one taken care of out of that group? And who's next to get that extension?
Well, I don't know that there are going to be any more extensions anytime soon. And that's not because the Red Sox wouldn't be interested. But let's start with both Bogarts and Bradley, both of whom are represented by Scott Boras, who generally philosophically opposes those kind of contract extensions with, you know, a few years of arbitration left and free agency coming up on the horizon. Boras's belief, and it's hard to argue, is that you do better on the free agent market with 30 teams bidding for you than you are in taking the security of a long-term deal. Now, every once in a while, there's an outlier of Boras's that that contradicts that. Jason Veritek ended up signing one of those deals. Greg Maddux at one point signed an extension before he could reach free agency, but they're few and far between for Boras clients. So it's going to be hard to get either Bogarts or Bradley locked up. They have attempted to do so with Mookie Betts a year ago. It was rejected. And it was a fairly significant extension that would have paid him, you know, nine figures. But he's at the spot now where he would prefer to go year to year through the arbitration process. And when you look at the fact that he won a $10.5 million award in arbitration and he's got two more arbitration years coming up, it's hard to argue with that thinking. Just like the old joke, you know, why do robbers rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Well, the reason that Christian Vasquez signed the contract extension is because he wanted to. And I think some of those other guys are kind of holding off.
And, of course, the Red Sox have to be careful with the money because of how much they have locked up in the starting rotation, both in the present and the future. And even with all that money pumped into that spot, you mentioned earlier a couple of those guys, Rodriguez and Pomerantz, will open the season on the DL. Steven Wright facing a suspension and then possibly DL time as well, or vice versa. What are the Red Sox doing, and do you expect them to do anything in the first couple weeks of the season to address their organizational starting pitching depth, or is that something that may linger into May or June and we'll see a Doug Fister type of signing?
Yeah, I think it's more likely the latter. You know, once everybody's healthy, you have, you know, the three big starters of, well, let's put Drew Pomerantz in that group as well. He won 17 games last year. Mm-hmm. So if you have those four guys healthy, then you've got Price, Sale, Porcello, and Pomerantz. And then Eduardo Rodriguez comes back soon after with the knee. So that's five. Steven Wright, once he serves his 15 games, that's six. Brian Johnson gives you a seventh starting pitcher. And maybe when Walden is optioned back to Pawtucket and continues to start, they regard him as another depth starting option. Say nothing of Hector Velasquez. I have my doubts about him and his ability to really keep them in games at the major league level. You may get a start, maybe two, at the beginning of the season. I don't know if you could count him on as a guy that is really reliable. But I think for now, with the way Brian Johnson has thrown the ball this spring, the emergence of Walden, and then the return to health soon, or active duty in Wright's case with the suspension, you know, you do have seven or eight options, and you need that to start. Whether they feel they need more, you know, will depend on the health of the other guys and how some other guys progress.
Again, we're talking to Sean McAdam of Boston Sports Journal. He is in Fort Myers with the team as they wrap up spring training, and Alex Cora wrapping up his first spring training with the team, at least as a manager. The Red Sox have had an interesting history with first-year managers their last couple. Terry Francona won a World Series his first year. Bobby Valentine was, I think it's safe to say, an unmitigated disaster. And then you came back and you had John Farrell win a World Series in his first year. So we're just a month into the Alex Cora era in Boston, but what did you make of him through his first spring training? What were your initial impressions?
Yeah, I think you have to come away impressed. He brings a lot of energy to the job, and I think some of the things that they had emphasized, which include, you know, maybe better and more direct communication with the players, being able to relate to the players. He is not that far removed from his playing career. He is, I think, the third youngest manager in the big leagues at 42. So all of those things make it easier, I think, for him to talk to these players and for the players to feel like, you know, that he has an open door policy and he's available and accessible. It's really hard to judge somebody's in-game moves and manager's strategy in spring training. You're dealing sometimes on the road with rosters that are far from major league caliber. You've got a lot of kids that are going to be playing in Portland and even below on your, you know, for your available players on a given day. You're restricted by how far pitchers have come along in their arm strength and pitch count, so you don't stay with them as long. You almost can get no read at all from how a guy is going to manage in spring training because the conditions and the dynamic is so different. But I think you can get a sense of how he's going to be as a man, as a leader, as someone relating to his players. And on that front, I think he's made a pretty good impression.
And one more question for you, Sean, real quick before we let you go. Chris Sale got hit by that line drive over the weekend. He said that he expects to start opening day. We really haven't heard much since, but from what you've seen, is that a bullet dodged or is it something to keep an eye on?
I suppose it's something that you have to keep checking in on, but they have no concerns. Sale had none an hour and a half after it happened. He said it was no different than being hit by a pitch. You know, he got it on the hip. There was some soreness, but it's a contusion and nothing more. He long tossed yesterday and was supposed to throw a bullpen today to help build up that arm strength. There was some talk initially about, because he had only thrown 20 or so pitches before that incident happened, of getting him in a camp game or a controlled environment or, you know, live batting practice, but he didn't feel he needed that. So he long tossed yesterday. I don't know how the bullpen went today, but he was in the clubhouse and seemingly okay. So I you know, it's always a little scary when you're number one starter gets hit on by a comebacker like that, but I think dodged a bullet is the perfect description for what went on and where he is now.
And Red Sox fans breathe a big sigh of relief. He is Sean McAdam. You can read his work at BostonSportsJournal.com and follow him on Twitter at Sean_McAdam. Sean, enjoy your next couple of weeks in Florida, and we look forward to hearing from you throughout the season.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It. Alex Barth and Alex Leibowitz with you. It is time for that. This is the only segment we keep up with any regular basis. All the time we'll say it's time for that segment, and we do it once and never do it again. Monday's Hot Takes, although it has different names, I guess, every time we do it.
Yeah, we should probably trademark something.
Something. But anyway, we tweeted out earlier on Monday for people to tweet us their hottest takes of the day. We got a lot going on in sports right now in addition to opening day coming up. March Madness is obviously in the final weekend coming up, Final Four. We've got the NBA NHL playoffs right around the corner. So a lot of hot takes out there. We'll start with one of our own as usual before we get into the Twitterverse. And mine is this. This has been a very disappointing March Madness tournament. Look, the 16 over the 1, UMBC, that was awesome. That was so cool, and I'm glad I saw that. But low seeds winning, it's only so fun for so long. A 9 seed versus an 11 seed in the Elite Eight, that's just bad basketball. I want to see the Blue Bloods. I want to see the best teams going at it. Upsets are fun here and there the first weekend, but I don't want the tournament to be built on them.
Yeah.
You have a team in the Final Four whose most recognizable member is a 98-year-old, was she a nun, right?
She's a nun, yes.
Nun, Sister Jean. I'm so sick of Sister Jean because I want to see basketball. Like, it's a great story, cool. It's adorable. But again, that's first-round stuff. At this point, I'm interested in the basketball game. Look, Duke Kansas was awesome. That's everything the tournament should be. We almost had a situation, this is part two of my hot take, where you had Florida State and Loyola Chicago in the Final Four. Would have been horrible for the NCAA, would have been horrible for ticket sales. So part two of my hot take, it was a little suspicious that Florida State didn't follow at the end. Is it possible that the NCAA went to the coaching staff and said, you know, we know everything you're doing down there isn't 100% clean. We can be a big problem for you, or you can just lose this game and let it all go.
that's a hot take.
And it's the NCAA, so you can't rule it out. But overall, I think outside of that Duke-Kansas game, very disappointing tournament so far.
I think there's this type of thing where a lot of people, and I'm one of them, who says when you have a season where it's tightly, you know, it's very competitive and there's no clear front runner, it makes for a better tournament because it makes the tournament that much more competitive. But, like, who are we really watching? Who are we really looking out for? Who's the stud in the tournament? And there's probably a few guys you can point to, but overall, it's not really appointment viewing. You don't have one team where you're like, they're great and I can't wait to see them. Loyola Chicago is probably the team that you look at and you're like, yeah, I'm rooting for them. I want to see them go far. Nope. And then Sister Jean, you don't, but you have Sister Jean, who I disagree with you. I think the further you get in, the more you have to give her screen time because she's clearly the mascot. They're clearly rallying around her. And I want to hate her. I want to not, like, I want to be that guy.
So do it.
I can't. I just can't force it. I think she's a sweet lady, and I like her.
You've gone soft, my friend.
I'm sorry. I just can't. And a lot of people are doing it. They're saying it's enough. It's enough. Get this lady off the screen.
It is enough.
She looks like a witch, whatever. We've heard it all. Maybe that was me who said that last part. But she's a sweet old lady. I heard her speak. She still has it.
But you know who I'd rather see than Sister Jean? Marvin Bagley, DeAndre Ayton, any one of these. This is supposed to be such a great year for prospects. Michael Porter Jr. Yeah. I'd rather see any – even Trae Young, who I think is overrated. I'd rather see any of these guys – on my TV on Saturday than a 98-year-old woman. I just rather would. I want to see the better basketball. All the best players in the nation, for the most part, are done.
Yeah, and you have, like, Devontae Graham, and he's
the only one left to me that sparks any interest.
Yeah, because he's been there for a while. I agree with you. It could be more star-studded, but it is what it is. And I think there's truth to the fact that March Madness is hyped. You've brought that up in the past.
All right, your hot take.
My hot take. Okay. So I had an original one, which is about the Yankees. It wasn't hot enough. I did some thinking. I reflected. And this is just a complete coincidence. Robert Kraft is meeting with the media today. My hot take, and today is Monday.
And I can confirm he said this before the meeting.
I saw this on Twitter. My hot take is that after this upcoming season, Robert Kraft will relinquish all control of the Patriots to his son, Jonathan. And there's a few reasons I think that. And this isn't just a hot take. I think this is a realistic possibility. Everything that's transpired, how can you look at this team and look at where the direction it's going in and not think that this era is coming to an end? People talk about Brady retiring. They talk about Bill Belichick retiring. What about Robert Kraft? When's he going to be done? The man's in his 80s, or he's 79, 80 years old, whatever it is. He might be even older than that. He's got to step away at some point. Wouldn't it make sense for him to do it, you know, within the next 2 years, 3 years?
I think he wants to step away on top. I think he wants to give the "We Are All Patriots" speech one more time. If they win the Super Bowl this year, I think there's a lot more credence to that. But he gave no indication today that was coming anytime soon. I don't think he would, but I think he's going to be the owner well into his 90s if he's still alive.
So what's going to happen first? Kraft retires, Belichick retires, or Brady?
First, I think Belichick. I think it's going to go Belichick, then Brady, then Kraft.
Okay. You see, and he will be owner by name into his 90s. But I think right now he has control. And obviously Jonathan is getting more and more trust from him. And obviously he trusts the guy. He's his son. But I think we're going to see him step in and have a much more heightened role and really be the face of that ownership group within the next couple of years.
I don't know. I think we'll see Jonathan take a bigger and bigger role. But Robert Kraft seems like the kind of guy that doesn't want to retire, right? His work gives him a reason. He seems like a guy who wants a reason to get out of bed in the morning, wants a reason to, you know, wants to have that platform for all his philanthropic interests and all that, which, by the way, kudos to him. mm-hmm. for flying the kids up on the plane yeah. over the weekend. Absolutely great move by him, but I think he's going to be around for a bit. All right, let's move on to the Twitter takes those sent in. First one comes in from Nick Mecca. I feel like we have this take every time we do this segment in some way, shape, or form, but here it is again. Tim Tebow will play in the MLB this season. I buy that.
Maybe in September they bring yeah. him up.
Not before September.
No, definitely not. I think the only way he's called up is if the Mets are completely out of it and they have really nothing else to play for. And like, all right, let's bring this guy in, try to sell a few tickets. This is something that will sell. We'll make money off of this. We'll make more money off of his merchandise, all that stuff. I could see it happening, and the uproar is going to be amazing.
It's going to be so annoying.
It will be hilarious. All the baseball freaks are going to be coming out of the woodworks and just start yelling at the Wilpons. But yeah, I think this is a possibility. I wouldn't put my money on it, but I could definitely see it happening.
Look, I could see it, and people have the Mets kind of competing for that last wild card spot. It relies on so many people being healthy who are just never healthy. Yeah. I think they could be out of it come September 1st. And if that's the case, I absolutely think we'll see Tim Tebow. Now, it won't go well, but I think we'll see him. John Sokoloff tweets in, the Celtics will lose to the Bucks in the first round of the playoffs. Hashtag steamy.
That is hashtag
steamy. It is. Look, I said it going back to last season. I've said it on this show quite a few times. The Celtics are a better team than the Bucks, but that matchup never bodes well for Brad Stevens. No. The Bucks are always a thorn in the Celtics' side. If they don't have Kyrie, and if they don't have Marcus Smart, if Jaylen Brown's still working his way back, which, based on the game against the Kings, he seems fine. But, if the Celtics have a couple missteps, I could absolutely see them losing to a team like the Bucks.
I had him clarify this. This is if Kyrie is not back. Which he won't be back until the second round.
If Kyrie's back, I think they should be okay. But yes, without Kyrie, that is a legitimate concern for me.
I have a counter hot take to his hot take.
Okay.
I think that the Celtics will make it to the Eastern Conference Finals regardless.
Wow.
I think they're going to make a run. They're winning games right now, and they're playing very well.
You realize they'll probably have to play Cleveland before the Eastern Conference Finals, right?
Okay, that's the only discrepancy.
They're probably going to have to play Cleveland in the second round.
If they don't have to go through Cleveland, then they'll make it there.
So that would mean that they pretty much have to get the one seed in the conference, which I believe they're 3.5 back as of this morning with 10 to play. But they do have two head-to-heads left against Toronto. So it's possible.
It's possible, yeah.
So you think basically they make it to Cleveland, however far that is.
If they don't have to face Cleveland in the second round, they will make it there. I don't think they're going to lose to any other team in that conference. With the exception of maybe Toronto.
Well, they probably have to face one of those two teams in the second round.
Okay. Then maybe not. I can still see them making a run, though.
If the seeding gets all screwed up, you could see it happening, basically.
If the seeding works out in their favor, yes. And even if it doesn't, I think this team is playing very well. I think they're well coached. I think they kind of had that it factor. And I could see them upsetting a team like Toronto. Because it's not the Golden State Warriors. They are beatable with the roster that they have in place, especially Brad Stevens.
I will counter hot take you as well. I don't know if this is a counter hot take. I don't even know if it's a hot take anymore.
A counter to the counter.
I don't even know if it's a hot take anymore, honestly. Okay. The Bruins are going to be playing once the Celtics are done.
Oh, absolutely.
They'll be playing for weeks after the Celtics are done.
Yeah, maybe not weeks. They're definitely, like, that's a team that's making it to the conference finals, the way they're playing.
I think so. Brad Marchand last night.
Oh my God. That sequence.
They're still going to get Bergeron back. They're still going to get Chara back. They're still going to get McAvoy back. They can rest, like we've talked about on the show numerous times, they can start resting up Tuukka Rask. He's not going to play. I think they're alternating them now, Rask and Khudobin every other game, which is the way to go.
Absolutely.
So I think a deep, deep run for the Boston Bruins. How about a football take here, Lebowitz?
Not very hot.
I don't know if this is a hot take, Jason Wexler. The Giants should pay Odell Beckham Jr., spelled out, top money because he's a top player, but not until 2 years from now. He'll eventually end his holdout, in parentheses. Then they can franchise tag him.
That's not.
There's a
happen.
Lot. There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, that's a long-winded hot take.
If Odell, he says he's not going to play without a new contract, he's not going to play without a new contract, so you just basically want them to pay him to sit on the shelf for 2 years. Jason is what he wants, and even with the tag, he could still hold out. So you want the Giants to waste Odell Beckham's prime? I guess it is. I guess it is a hot take because that's a ridiculous concept that he's putting out there.
Yeah, I don't think... I think it's a little ridiculous. Just sign the man. He's worth it. You had the cap space.
Pay him or trade him.
You just paid... You gave Nate Solder $39 million guaranteed. Like, come on. This is the one of the top five wide receivers in the NFL. You need him on this team, especially given the fact that you have the number two overall pick. You're going to have a quarterback. You need that number one target. You got him in your hands right now. Pay him. I think it's ridiculous that this has gone on this long.
And look, if you're not going to pay him, you have the second pick in the draft. You can pick up another valuable piece if you trade him. You can jumpstart the rebuild. If you feel like he's not a part of the rebuild, move on.
And we have a,
but do something.
Breaking news. I'm just seeing this. Someone texted it to me.
Breaking news on the recorded podcast. Love doing this.
Breaking news on the record. We're just finding this out as we're recording.
Hit me with it.
On Monday afternoon. Giants are asking for a first rounder for Odell Beckham Jr.
Just a first rounder?
That's it? That's the report.
So I was going to bring this up.
Patriots.
Right. If a first round gets you Brandon Cooks last year. Oh, I absolutely do that. Brandon Cooks, Odell Beckham, and Julian Edelman. There you go.
And then you wouldn't have to re-sign Brandon Cooks after next season.
Right. You get one more year, Brandon. Yes. Oh, I'm all. Well, you probably still have to pay Odell Beckham, but we know how much he loves Tom Brady.
Well, it's $8 million off the books.
He might take a discount.
It's going to be $8 million off the books with Brandon Cooks out, and that's a guy who's going to want more than probably $8 million next year, or the year after that in his contract, annually, whatever. I would do it. I just don't think that I don't think the Patriots would be willing to pay him as much as.
He may take the discount to play with Brady. Look, the Giants are a disaster of an organization. For being one of the NFL's like oldest and most traditional teams, the Maras are idiots. We saw how they handled John Brown last year. We've seen how they've handled numerous players with serious off the field issues before. And now they don't like Odell Beckham because what? Because he's going on a boat the night before the playoffs. He's got a little bit of a drug
deal. I don't like him either.
You know what? They were fine with Lawrence Taylor. They should be fine with him. I'm sorry.
Lawrence Taylor.
They should.
He did far worse.
The only thing with the Patriots, well, that was after his career, though.
That's true.
Although they're still fine with him. They still support him.
Hey, he's the greatest linebacker ever.
The thing with the Patriots, it's not even that stuff that worries me. It's the boat picture. And how's Belichick going to view that?
Yeah, I just don't. Odell Beckham Jr. likes to say he wants to be the Tom Brady of wide receivers and play that whole thing. He's the one. He's so full of crap. It's not even funny. He's extremely talented, but talk about just a frustrating athlete. The guy can't seem to get out of his own
way.
But
isn't that Belichick's specialty? If he could make Randy Moss work, shouldn't he be able to make? Well, look, this would be the big test because he made those guys work 5-10 years ago. He hasn't been able to do it the last couple of years.
Randy Moss never had tantrums like Odell Beckham Jr. has had. Odell Beckham Jr. is someone who I just don't know if he can get along in a Patriots locker room. I think you just wasted a first-round pick on Brandon Cooks, and I use wasted strongly. I think you got to rebuild. The window's closing. Again, the window is closing. Get the guys you need. You have other priorities outside of the wide receiving core.
It shouldn't matter. The guy's the fourth best receiver in football. Pay him. And that's low. I have him ranked, I know, a lot lower than a lot of people.
A lot of it comes down to whether or not Gronk will be healthy, too. If you have Gronk, you have Edelman.
If Gronk retires and you can get Odell Beckham for a first-round pick, you do that in a second. I don't care about the off-the-field issues. You do it.
Yeah, I would probably
because that's the
that.
Only hope you have to win a championship then, if Gronk leaves.
And if Gronk and Cooks are off the books after next year, that's $20 million, give or take, that you can put towards a guy like Odell.
All right, let's move on. We got two more takes here. This one is also semi-Patriots related. Cal Fuego on Twitter.
Alex Wong.
The New England Revolution will win the MLS Cup before the Patriots win their next Super Bowl. That's wrong. That's incorrect. Haven't they never won one? Aren't they the only original team left that's never won? I don't know enough about the Revs to definitively say that, but I'm just going to go gut feeling that's wrong.
Don't know, don't care. If they win before the Patriots do, or if they never win another title again, I do not care. It's the MLS. It's a joke.
How about this? I think the Cannons will win whatever the MLL trophy is, before the Revolution win a cup.
Oh, yippee.
I'll give you that. Give me the Cannons before the Revolution. Give me the Boston Pride, which is the women's hockey team ahead of the Revolution. Give me the Boston Lobsters, which is the Boston professional tennis team before the Revolution. The New England Pirates, the Massachusetts Pirates, the new arena football team starting in Worcester. Give me them before the Revolution. I don't know much about the Revs, but I do know this. They are traditionally choke artists. There's a reason they've never won a title. Kraft doesn't care about that team. They don't pay talent. It's not going to happen. That much I know.
Yeah, I have nothing to add. You're
not going to rev up my take at all?
I don't care at all about the Cannons. I don't care about the Revolution. I don't care about the Lobsters. Who cares? We have real sports in this region. You have the Patriots, the Bruins, the Celtics, and the Red Sox. If you pay attention to any team outside of those teams, with the exception of college hockey, you're a fool.
Look, I'll go to an arena football game in Worcester.
I would do that for the experience. I wouldn't be a season ticket holder. I wouldn't pay attention.
You're not going to drop $20 on season tickets for the Massachusetts Pirates?
I might, and maybe I'll scalp and make some money.
This has been a long-ass segment. We have one more, and then somebody told me to hold up because they claim they have one, but we'll see if he gets it in time. But first, Stephen Altieri, Salty Steve on Twitter. The Yankees will get off to a slow start around 500 mid-May, but still hit the Las Vegas over of 94.5 wins. Also, there's a two-part take.
I like the
also,
second one.
More than 8 concession items will be intentionally thrown on the field during Red Sox-Yankees games regular/postseason. Hashtag return of the rivalry.
Now, here's the thing about that second take. All you need is one fan to throw something, and then you got at least five more.
Look, it's going to be – I'll kind of bring that take down. It's kind of a goofy take. I'll make it serious. The rivalry is back. There's going to be heated games between these two teams this year. I'm sick of the Red Sox having this faux rivalry with the Orioles. It's such a joke. Who are the Baltimore Orioles that they think they can have a rivalry with the Boston Red Sox?
I do hate Buck Showalter. The reason that's such a heated rivalry part of it is because Buck Showalter used to be the Yankees manager, and there's some bad blood there.
I don't think that's it. I just think it's the Orioles thinking they're the second best team in the division. Look, I am a total pass on that rivalry, and I am glad we should have Red Sox Yankees.
I pray that Chris Sale ends up throwing at Giancarlo Stanton the first time that he faces him this season. I want a pitcher to intentionally throw at a hitter so that someone can – that there's some brawl this season. I feel like we got another take.
We got one more. This is a great one. This is a great Celtics take.
This is good.
Terry Rozier, Scary Terry, is more, all caps, more valuable – than Al Horford.
So wrong, but I like it.
I'll buy it. I will buy this take. On. I will buy this take because the one thing that has killed the Celtics in this 2-year run has been the lack of a consistent bench score. And while Rozier's not consistent, he's the closest thing they have.
I'll take a defensive centerpiece who's the most versatile guy on that team.
So Marcus Smart. I'll buy.
Okay, and he's more valuable than Rozier too.
I don't know about more, but yeah, he is. Marcus Smart is much more valuable.
Horford gets a bad rep. You know, he's not super. He is consistent. He's a boring player. Sometimes, you know, he gets banged up, and I think that's the reason you see some inconsistency from his game. But he's your most valuable big man by a mile. Although Greg Monroe could be taking over, and. He can do it all. He can pass. He can shoot. He can spread the floor. He's decent defensively. He's not a big body by any means, but he does the job. To say Terry Rozier, who can score but can't do much more than that, is more valuable. It's a hot take. I'll give him that. It's a hot take, but it's not true.
Look, capital M or all caps, more better. Or more valuable? That was great, Grant.
More better.
More valuable? I don't know about that. And again, I have said, and I will continue to say, I think I think Marcus Smart is more valuable than Terry Rozier. But I think the value of Rozier and Horford is closer than the value of Rozier and Smart. I'll say that.
So you have Smart over Horford.
I think Marcus Smart, value. Not necessarily better player, but you can get guys who do what Al Horford does. They're not easy to get,
but really, you
can get them.
I don't think so.
A guy like Jonas Valanciunas, it's a big who can pass and stretch the floor a little bit. They're hard players to get, but they exist.
So you think if you traded, if right now Smart and Horford traded positions, the Celtics would be more successful than they have been since Smart's been out?
I would feel a lot better. So regular season, I don't know. I would feel a lot better going in. If I could have one player for the playoffs between the two of them, it would be Marcus Smart. Because if you get to Golden State or you get to Cleveland, you get to Toronto, who do you want on that superstar? Who do you want guarding Steph Curry? Who do you want guarding LeBron James? Who do you want guarding DeMar DeRozan? It's not Al Horford.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's all about taking away the superstar. So, look, regular season, I'd rather have Horford. For 82 games, Horford's going to win you more. But when you get to the postseason, give me Marcus Smart.
Okay.
Maybe I'm overrating Smart. I've done that in the past. I'm guilty of that. I'm a huge Marcus Smart guy, but that's just where I
stand. That makes more sense than Rozier. Rozier is not in the same playing field. But I'll say this to his point. it's obviously a lot closer now than it was in the beginning of the season. So he's clearly proven that he's more valuable than we initially thought.
All right, this has been a wildly long segment, so we're going to wrap it up. Thanks, Evan, for that one. Thanks to everybody who sent in the hot takes. If you want to go back and read them or reply to any of them, we retweeted them all on our Twitter, at Callin' It Podcast. Make sure you check us out online as well, clnsmedia.com. Follow CLNS on Twitter, at clnsmedia. We'll be back next week. Masters, okay. Right around the corner. The tradition unlike any other. I got goosebumps. So until then, enjoy opening day, everybody. Enjoy the Final Four. For Alex Lubowitz, I'm Alex Barth. This has been Callin' It, powered by CLNS. We will talk to you next week. Goodbye.